The other room. Gladick quirked an eyebrow.
For what purpose?
To discuss what in the million hells we're going to do now that the White Lich knows we're in the city.
I do not question the discussion. I question us leaving this room. Until our task is complete, we should not leave the Knight of Odosein alone for a single second. We cannot allow him to come to harm under any circumstances.
What a wonderful sentiment, Blaze said. Too bad you don't apply it to your own fucking friends. Gladick looked him in the eye.
You are referring to young Volo.
No, I'm referring to the fish we ate for breakfast.
We're lucky she's alive, you son of a bitch.
What were you thinking?
My thinking was very simple. That if I allowed the knight to perish, then I would doom everyone in the city. A state of being that would also include Volo.
Blaze stalked forward, sandals landing heavily.
Go on and tell me how it had to be done because the greater good. And also, I'm not looking at the big picture. And my head is so soft that you could spread it on a slice of bread. I've heard it all a million times before. You can go ahead and stroke yourself off for being such a decisive leader who's not afraid to make the hard decisions. You know what you can't do? Sacrifice your own people. When they're gone, they're gone. They don't get to come back. You don't get to betray them just because you're too fucking stupid and gutless to come up with a better solution. When someone's fought by your side all the way and they've bled for you and you for them, that forges a sacred bond. When you break it, you forfeit your soul.
Gladick smiled thinly.
You rage for the sake of poor Volo. Yet, if I had slaughtered an innocent soldier to save the knight's life, you would congratulate me on my quickness of mind.
Are you seriously trying to call me a hypocrite? Of course I don't care about a stranger, but Volo's no stranger, is she? She's one of us. If you're that ready to kill one of us, then you shouldn't be here.
I have explained this to you more than once. If that is required to dispense with the Lich, I am ready to sacrifice any one of us, including myself.
Blaze gripped the hilt of his sword.
Would you like a hand with that? I promise it'll somehow slay the White Lich, too.
The old man narrowed his eyes to slits.
You do not argue this from the mind, as the Odosein would train us. Rather, you argue it from the guts, the angry spleen, and the festering bowel. What lies at the core of this?
The crazy idea that you don't murder your own friends! Dante had been taken aback by the heat of Blaze's fury. He was fond enough of Volo, but he considered her more of a useful ally than as a close friend like Neron. But the answer lit up like a torchstone. This wasn't about Volo. It was about Lyra, the woman Dante had sent to her death in order to save the city of Narashtovic.
It wasn't a perfect call, Dante said. But the point wasn't to kill Volo. She was in the wrong place, at the wrong time.
Blaze tossed up his hands.
Because she was trying to save the knight herself! And then got taken by surprise. The same way we all were.
If Gladick hadn't acted, both the knight and Volo would have been ripped apart by the Blighted. Instead, they're both alive.
Through sheer luck for both of them! Why are you defending this?
It turned out okay, didn't it? So it can't have been quite as bad as you're saying.
You agree with him, don't you?
You probably would have done the exact same thing.
Blaze eyed him, face reddened. A blonde lock stuck to his brow.
I bet that when you healed the knight first.
Dante sputtered, then opted for the truth.
I had to. He's the only Odoseine left in Tanaritain. As soon as I was done, I healed Volo too.
But you couldn't know she'd last that long. Why is this so hard to understand? We don't sacrifice each other. We stand together at all times, no matter how bloody and dark they get. That's why we always win.
What else was I supposed to do?
Everything hinges on the knight. I'd have resurrected my own dad and killed him again if that's what it took to save the Odoseine.
Are you lying to me? Or to yourself? If the knight died, we could have gone back to our training, just like we already planned.
There's no guarantee we'll ever learn. Not before the Lich is beyond our means to stop.
Yes, that's what everyone says, isn't it? But they don't know a goddamn thing.
Yet for some reason, we keep swallowing their every claim, and look where it's gotten us.
The disgust in his voice was so thick, Dante fell back half a step. Blaze strode from the room, slamming the door behind him. Dante moved to the door and opened it, but he didn't bother to chase after Blaze. Instead, he motioned to a servant standing at attention down the hall.
He'll be looking for beer. No, that's wrong. He'll want something much stronger. For everyone's sake, you should see that he gets it.
The servant pushed off from the wall and trotted after Blaze. Dante re-entered the chamber.
Naren cleared his throat. He's walked out on us. Do you believe it'll be temporary?
Dante flung himself down on a seating pad, wishing more than anything for a gloriously massive stuffed chair.
He won't give up after we've come this far. He just needs to blow off some steam. Fortunately, he's even better with that than he is with a sword.
The rest of us do not have the luxury of taking time for ourselves.
Gladick said.
The Aedron Rane could strike as soon as tomorrow. We require a credible strategy.
That depends entirely on whether the knight wakes up, doesn't it? If he's still unconscious when the enemy gets here, our credible strategy will consist of running for the nearest canoe and paddling away as fast as we can, secure in the knowledge that no one will survive to tell anyone of our cowardice.
Are you certain you healed him correctly?
I made what was bleeding not bleed, and made the stuff that was broken quit that too. If you think you can do better, you're welcome to try.
Gladick crossed the room to the pallet holding the knight. The man was in his 40s, but he had the build of a soldier 10 years younger. Even in his sleep, it looked like the muscles of his face had been pulled tight behind his head.
Gladick kneeled beside him, muttering. A film of ether came to his hands. He dispersed it over the unconscious knight.
This is a deep but normal sleep, Gladick declared after a short observation. As can be proven.
He reached out and pinched the man's nose shut. The knight jerked his head to the side. He made a muffled groan, then blinked, taking a hard breath through his mouth.
The nether and ether closed shut to Dante, as hard as Blaze had slammed the door on his way out.
Dante rolled his eyes.
At least we know he hasn't lost any of his abilities.
You are among allies, Knight of the Odoseine.
Gladek's voice was almost gentle.
I am Gladek, once of Bressel. That is Dante Galand, leader of Narashtovik in the north. The good Captain Naren has told us of each other.
The man tried to speak, then bent over, coughing.
Naren poured water from a pitcher into a cup, both objects made from exceedingly well-wrought glass, and handed it to the knight. The knight drank, then tried again.
I'm alive.
And well, Gladek said.
But the Blighted, they were eating me.
They were, Dante said. We thought that was rather rude and asked them to stop. The request was phrased by chopping them in half. Then, as long as we were in the neighborhood, we decided to fix you up. The knight stared at him blankly.
Your friend said you were my allies, but you talk like you're mocking me.
It's been a long day. We've just scored our first real victory against the White Lich, and my other friend is off getting drunk without me. I'm not in the most formal of moods.
It's a strange time for us all. My name is Beck Olin, Knight of Odosein, and sworn to the Drakebane.
Glad to meet you. We've got a lot of work ahead of us, so excuse me for cutting to the chase. Do you still promise to help us kill the White Lich? By the way, and I mention this again for no reason, we did just save you from being eaten alive by Blighted.
Did you also save the city?
It took a beating, but the one we gave the monsoon was far worse. Beck laughed slowly.
Hari are helping to save Tanaratain while the Emperor forsakes it. This must be the end of the world because everything is upside down.
Yes or no, Beck?
My decision hasn't varied since the moment I made it. My entire life was spent training to die fighting the Aedan Rane. That's what I will do now.
Perfect. The gods must be impressed with your devotion, because they're going to give you the chance to die to the Lich within the next 2 days. Sleep now. We need you ready.
The chamber included 2 glass doors that opened onto a balcony. To let the wounded rest, while being able to keep an eye on them, Dante brought Gladek and Naren outside.
We have the assets and the knowledge to kill the Lich, Dante said. If we can find the prime body within his army, and bring back within Odosein range, one good stab will end this. The problem is that, after today, the Lich knows we're here, and that we've got an Odosein with us. There's no way he hasn't guessed our plan.
Gladek moved to the balustrade, resting his hand on the railing. It was well into the afternoon, and the sun shimmered from the canals and the bay.
The intention of today's attack could not be more transparent. To assassinate the Odosein and leave us impotent to stop the Aedan Rane from absorbing the city. Since his effort failed, it would be foolish to assume the Lich's next strike will be in person. More likely, he will send another army led by one of his lieutenants.
Dante's skin prickled.
Or he won't send an army at all. Can the lesser liches travel underwater like the Blighted can?
Likely so. Though more intelligent, they share many traits with the Blighted, and are not subject to the same rules of mortality that we mortals face.
Then we could be in deep shit.
although that might actually solve our problem since an underlich might not be able to walk through it.
It took Gladik a moment.
You believe the Aedan Rane might send one of his lieutenants through the canals?
That's what I'd do. We have no way of watching what's beneath the surface. One of his pet sorcerers could sneak up and assassinate Beck before we knew what was happening. He could even combine it with a frontal attack, then ambush us with a lesser lich as soon as we stepped out from safety.
He has already proven the concept with the Blighted. I believe this is eminently plausible. We must treat it as though it is a part of his plan or risk being ruined by it.
Dante pinched the bridge of his nose.
The reason it's such a good plan is that we can't really stop it. When he attacks again, what are we supposed to do? Hole up in the top of a tower and let the citizens get massacred by the Blighted until the White Lich himself shows up?
Or do we leave Eris Ossus altogether?
Neither, because your premise is wrong. I can stop a lieutenant from infiltrating the canals. The ether can be applied to dry land to determine whether it has been recently disturbed by footsteps, and the same may be done to water.
That's very clever. But there's no way you can watch the whole city.
Again, your premise is flawed. I only have to be able to observe the waterways closest to this island. I believe the roof of that tower would provide an appropriate vantage.
He pointed to the tallest tower in the city, a black spire located a couple of islands away that stood a good 60 feet higher than the peak of the one they were currently inside.
You're just going to sit up there and watch.
Indeed, that will provide you with the security necessary to locate the Aedan Rane, survey him, and deduce his next move. In doing so, we might even craft a way to strike at him before he is able to follow through with his plan.
Dante glanced around for any insects he could use as scouts.
I'll start at once.
Gladik nodded and turned to go.
Naren gave them a skeptical look.
Aren't you forgetting something? Such as coordinating with the city leaders, who we will be relying on to provide a large-scale defense.
You've already been working with them, haven't you? Dante said. Let them know we're expecting another attack soon. And it's likely to be much worse than the one we weathered today.
I'll do that. And I'll see about securing a new guide in case we need to move out while Vola remains incapacitated.
Naren and Gladik departed the balcony. Seeing no bugs about, Dante did the same, exiting into the garden outside the tower to gather up a half dozen moths and large flies. As he sent them flying up to the balcony while he climbed the stairs, he felt a pang of resentment toward Blaze. His input was always invaluable. Even when his suggestions were too ridiculous to try, they tended to push Dante toward more creative solutions of his own. Dante knew as well as anyone that it wasn't always possible to throw aside the stresses of battle like a well-gnawed chicken bone. But would it have killed Blaze to wait to explode until after they were out of immediate danger of being overrun?
Back in their quarters, Beck had fallen asleep again, snoring lightly. Volo remained deeply unconscious.
On the balcony, Dante made himself a comfy seat of blankets and pads, then sent his tiny scouts soaring north from the city, directing the faster flies higher to hunt for the White Lich, while the moths followed the largest road, exiting the city to the north. Movement on top of the black spire drew his eye. A tall, thin figure, crossed to the edge of the spire's roof, attended to by a pair of servants. Gladick settled into his perch, ether twinkling on his hand. The moths spotted the retreating monsoon after an hour of flight. The armada moved along beneath the trees at a steady clip. It had been diminished, but remained imposing in size. Dante kept one moth steady in the air, high above them, while sending another to dip below the canopy. The monsoon still fielded at least one nethermancer, possibly more. If he could identify them... A tendril of awareness moved through the nether, questing toward the moth. Dante drew back to passive observation, leaving the insect to its own devices. But the alien presence continued onward, hunting in a wide spiral that soon tightened closer and closer around the thin cord connecting Dante to the moth. As the presence snapped down on the cord, Dante severed it. Troubling. Either the Nethermancer was extremely skilled, sensitive to any disruption of the shadows, or the White Lich had warned them to be on the lookout for such things. That the monsoon had any Nethermancers at all was even more troubling. The rebels hadn't seemed to have access to sorcerers back when Dante and Blaze, in their ignorance, had been working alongside them. Either they'd been keeping some of their strength hidden, or they'd only recently found, or convinced, the Nethermancers to join them. But why would Nethermancers help them? Surely they had to understand that the Aed and Rane wouldn't allow people of their power to continue to exist without ensuring their absolute loyalty to him. Was that the very reason they were allying with them? To be made underliches? Still slaves, yes, but at least thinking ones, whose lifespans would last for centuries. If Dante reached the point where he knew that victory against the Lich was impossible, would he make the same decision? The monsoon wasn't doing anything more interesting than retreating. He couldn't get spies close enough to them to overhear their talk, and his flies were likely to take another few hours to reach the White Lich. With the western sky reddening and his stomach emptying, he got up to see about food. In the inner chamber, Beck remained asleep. But Vola was sitting up in her bed, staring blankly across the room. Volo! Dante ran to her, slowing as he neared. She didn't turn her head. Volo? Are you all right? She didn't speak or look at him. He took a step closer. Volo, you were hurt very badly, but you're okay now. Do you understand? Again, she gave no sign of having heard. Her eyes gazed right through him. Frowning, he waved a hand in her face, then drew back his elbow and threw a punch at her nose. He stopped it 3 inches from her face, which was good because she didn't even flinch. With a sinking feeling, Dante reached into the nether within her. As far as he could tell, her brain appeared intact. It wasn't bleeding or swollen, and the rest of her, while still showing some healing to do, was in relatively fine shape. He decided against summoning Gladick away from his duties in favor of leaving her be, and seeing if she snapped out of it on her own. Dante stuck his head out in the hallway and asked the servant there for a meal. The servant went downstairs without a word. 10 minutes later, he knocked on the door and delivered a plate of fish, greens, and fried bananas.
Thank you, Dante said. I don't suppose you've heard any gossip about where my friend Blaze has gone off to?
I have, the man said with some satisfaction. Friend of mine said the Hari is down at a pub on the docks with some of the soldiers. Word is your friend is trying to see which can hold more liquid, the bay or his stomach.
After eating, Dante took a quick nap to replenish his dwindling command of the shadows. When he woke, he went back to close observation through his spies. The sun set. Lanterns glowed from shores and towers. The streets filled with the sounds of rowdy singing, drunken laughter, and boisterous, free-wheeling insult competitions that drew crowds by the score. It was the liveliest Dante had seen Tanar attain since before the revolution. He felt a small measure of pride in having helped restore it, however briefly it might last. The White Lich and his army of Blighted didn't need lanterns or cook fires, and spotting them in the middle of the night might have proven exceedingly difficult if not for the fact that there were many thousands of them in many hundreds of boats. That and the fact that the White Lich glowed like a star descended to earth. They had advanced over the last few hours, and their camp was roughly 30 miles north of Eris Ossus. Close enough to fall on the city within half a day. But the Lich would be waiting for word from the monsoon, pushing the timeline back to at least a full day. Cold comfort. Keeping his distance from the Lich, Dante dropped 2 flies through the canopy, gauging numbers and hunting for the prime body, which was probably being kept in an armored boat of some kind. As he sent a fly over a formation of Blighted, his connection to it was severed so abruptly that Dante uttered a startled, "Hey!" He commanded the second of the low-elevation flies to go still. Yet the presence that swept toward it was as inexorable as a rogue wave. Though Dante hadn't given it any orders, the fly began to move. He commanded it to stop. An iron grip clamped down on the insect. Dante grabbed hold of it with all his strength, yet it was like trying to stop a horse cart by grabbing hold of the rear gate and digging in his heels. The fly buzzed downward, passing over the heads of the Blighted as they stirred restlessly in their undecorated canoes. The Lich stood ahead, radiating faintly beneath the cover of the trees. He grew larger and larger, until the fly could see nothing else. His eyes holding perfectly steady, even as the color within them cycled from one shade of blue to the next. Dante tried to sever the link to the fly, but it was like trying to cut through a wad of cotton with a block of wood. The Lich shook his massive head.
"You are no more than this pest. No more than the fleas that feed on your weak meat. Everything is mine, sorcerer. And when you bend the knee to me, you will weep tears of joy."
The Lich crushed the connection in a vice of nether. Dante had sent 2 other flies there as well, which were currently circling high overhead, seemingly beyond detection. Yet they were so high up that they couldn't catch more than spotty glimpses of the Blighted through the canopy. He'd be able to follow the army's movement, but if he spotted the prime body, it would be through sheer luck. Even that felt highly unlikely. With the Lich aware that he was being watched, there was no chance he'd let his vulnerability be seen. A scream slashed across the night. Dante jerked his head up. Light fell from the black spire, a streak of ether. It silhouetted Gladik as he hurtled toward the ground 200 feet below. Dante shot to his feet. He grabbed at the shadows, but there was nothing he could do. With a flash of pale light, Gladik struck the ground. 12. Dante ran down the tower steps. Each second felt long enough to compose, seal, and deliver a letter. Yet no time seemed to pass at all as he threw himself into a canoe, thrashing madly to the island hosting the Black Spire. He'd been too far away to mark the exact spot where Gladik had landed, but all he had to do was run to the cluster of servants and onlookers circled around the body. Dante slid through the grass to kneel next to Gladik.
"Get back!"
The crowd retracted 2 steps, leaving him alone with the broken figure. It was both better than Dante had expected, yet entirely gruesome. Bones poking from the right shin, hip turned strangely, blood staining Gladik's jabat and leaking from his lolling mouth. Dante had already cut himself as he'd run across the island. The nether was everywhere, falling on him before he called to it. He sent it into Gladik's form. The old man wasn't breathing. His heart was still. Yet the nether still circulated within him, pulsing in confusion. Dante had seen this before. It was the state in which the body wasn't dead in the full sense, the shadows within it not yet certain that they were supposed to flow from the corpse to rejoin the world as a whole. He drove the nether into Gladik's heart like a black dagger. Blocking out all other thoughts, he churned the nether in a circle to mix with the unsteady shadows that were already there. Once they were thoroughly emulsified, he expanded the nether, contracted it, and expanded it again, slowly at first, then quicker and quicker with each cycle, until the frantic pace matched the thrum of his own heart. He held the pace for 12 seconds. Feeling woozy, he removed himself from Gladik's heart. Yet it continued to beat on its own. Gladik coughed bright red blood, groaned, and lapsed back into unconsciousness. The crowd erupted into gasps and chatter. Someone gave a short scream. A young man with ragged hair fell to his knees and lowered his face in supplication.
"You brought him back from the dead?"
Dante shook his head, too focused on his task to try to explain that Gladik hadn't really been dead, and aware that, even if he tried, it would do nothing to quench the ridiculous stories the locals would be telling about it later that same night. He cleared his mind of thoughts, waiting with forced patience while the ether filled him. He sent the light to Gladik's shattered shin, making it whole, while at the same time applying the nether to the priest's numerous and catastrophic internal injuries. Bad though these were, Gladik had fallen more than 200 feet. The impact should have burst him apart. The flash of light Dante had seen at the end must have been some trick of ether Gladik had used to save his life. Dante hadn't had the time and rest to recuperate all of the nether he'd spent during the battle, and he ran out before he'd finished undoing the damage to Gladik's body. It would have to be enough for the time being. A team of soldiers arrived with a stretcher. They gathered Gladik up and transported him to the tower where Volo and Beck were currently recovering. Dante tilted his head back at the spire. Some loose masonry was scattered across the island. He turned to the crowd. "Was anyone with him when he fell? Did you see what happened?" A servant took a step forward, bowing his head.
"I was on the roof. He was near the edge. muttering to himself and casting his weird spells. Then he cried out and slipped over the edge.
A woman dressed in the green and white of the Drakebane's soldiers nodded.
So the same. Ledge crumbled under his foot. I'd warned him it'd be damaged in the fighting, but he didn't listen.
No one had anything more than that. Dante got the name of the soldier and the servant who'd witnessed it, then paddled back to the island where they'd set up their private hospital, which was getting disturbingly full. A pair of soldiers had been posted outside the hospital quarters. Inside, Gladick was unattended. Dante wasn't certain if that was because local physicians had decided they couldn't do anything for him, or if they refused to touch dirty foreigners. Gladick was breathing deeply and evenly. It didn't seem like the kind of sleep he would soon wake from. Volo had curled up to face the wall. Dante called to her softly, but she made no sign she'd heard. Beck, at least, seemed reasonably healthy, given what he'd been through, although obviously weak. The door banged open, vomiting Blaze into the room. His eyes were bleary, and he was missing one of his sandals. Naren entered after him, looking annoyed yet grave. Blaze staggered over to Gladick, taking a route that was wriggly enough to seduce a snake.
What happened to him?
He fell from a tower, Dante said.
A tower? Are you sure it wasn't his high horse?
Dante explained what little he knew. He'll live, I think.
Hardly a surprise, is it? Devils never die easy. If he was going to fall on something, why couldn't it have been a field of whirling blades?
Are you that drunk, or just that stupid? He could be out for days. If the White Lich shows up and Gladick's still unconscious, that means no Andrak. We'll be down to a single sorcerer.
Blaze crossed his arms and made an attempt to nod, though his head was swaying side to side as much as up and down.
Yeah, well, he's still a bastard, and I'm tired. Wake me up if he dies, will you? Just make sure to bring beer.
Blaze shuffled toward the other room, ramming into the doorway and half collapsing inside. Even with the door closed behind him, the racket he made unfolding his bed from the wall was enough to wake Beck. Naren shook his head in disgust and indicated the balcony. It was hours past sundown, and the offshore breeze had died away to nothing, leaving the night humid and warm. Most of the revelers had gone off to bed, but isolated shouts and cackles rang through the darkness.
"We're dead," Dante said. "With Gladick in this state, a lesser lich could sneak up on us at any moment."
Naren pinched his chin.
"In that case, I would recommend the use of a little-known asset known as guards. It is admittedly primitive when compared to sorcery, but some have found it effective."
"Yes, all right. Maybe it's not the end of the world in and of itself. But this isn't our only problem, is it? Volo's catatonic. I don't even know if she can hear me. Gladick might be in a coma. Even if he snaps out of it in time, Blaze can barely stand to stay in the same room with him. Everything's falling apart, and it's at the worst possible time."
"Given the frequency that you find yourself in such conditions, I had come to think that you enjoyed them."
"I don't know if we can rely on our original plan to take out the Lich. I need to think of something else. Some way to hit the Lich before he comes close to the city and puts his guard up."
Naren nodded, gazing across the dark towers.
"As before, I don't know what help I can be to you, but I'll offer whatever I can."
I suppose you can help me keep an eye on the city. We should set up patrols to look out for more blighted. The attempt they made today was too good not to try again. They went to the ground floor to speak to a woman named Sal Dan, who had been acting as Naren's liaison since the first threats had arisen against the city. She sent runners out to bring more soldiers to the island for instruction. While they waited, Dante asked Naren to step outside. He moved a short ways from the tower, checking to ensure they were alone. The loon I gave Jonah broke when we were on our way here. I'm going to replace it.
Do you anticipate that we'll be working separately again?
It's possible I'll need to venture outside the city for recon. Besides, if you're out on patrol and you bump into a lesser lich, I doubt you'll want to wait for a runner to inform me that you're currently shitting your pants. Dante waited until a pair of the city's innumerable rats wandered by, then slew them with one of his few remaining dabs of nether. He picked up the bodies and brought them upstairs, where he severed their heads and rapidly cleaned them of flesh and brains, a process that had become second nature to him. Naren clamped his hands in his armpits.
Is it required that everything involving your art must be disgusting?
You sound like Blaze. As the saying goes, if you want to make a loon, you have to break a few rats' skulls.
Dante cracked the skulls into the component pieces that would form the loon, and bound them together with some Tenarian thread that was strong enough to use as fishing line. He cut his finger, and Naren's, and they each added a dab of blood to the two parts, forging the connection between them. They tested them to confirm they worked, then returned downstairs, where Sal had assembled 30 soldiers. After Dante briefed them on the previous blighted attack, they took to canoes and dispersed through the city canals. Feeling moderately better about the state of things, Dante returned to his balcony, shifting his attention between the White Lich, the retreating monsoon, who'd made camp in the swamps miles north of Erisosis, and the city's innumerable canals and waterways. The revelry had finally ended, citizens exhausted by the battle, trundling off to their beds, aware they might have another fight on their hands all too soon. Having had an awfully long day himself, Dante propped his back against the wall. He woke with a start, heart pounding. It was still dark, but the stars had jumped close to 2 hours. 2 hours that Dante had neglected to keep watch on the vulnerable city. He activated his new loon. Naren didn't answer. He was probably asleep too, leaving the patrols to better-rested Tenarians. Dante sent his nearby bugs on a quick sweep of the skies. The city seemed at peace, but that could be true right up until the moment 10,000 blighted jumped from hiding in the waterways. He jogged up the stairwell to the rooftop, emptying himself of thoughts. In the stillness, the ether arrived, coming freely, most of his ability restored by sleep and the long hours since he'd used it. He pushed open the hatch to the roof. He was 200 feet high, enough to see a good portion of the city at once. Gathering up the ether, he sent it down to the canals, not to the surface, which would likely be painted with the disturbance of any number of vessels, even at this late hour, but below it. Faint, small lines appeared, the trails left behind by cruising fish. He cast his net further and further, working in an outward spiral. Knowing he had limited light to work with, he gave each segment of canal no more than a dusting, hoping that it would be enough to catch the trail left by anything human-sized. As he neared the western wall, The dust lit up like white fire, illuminating dozens of tangled strands. Dante's throat caught. He sent a dragonfly screaming toward the site, but it couldn't see past the murky surface of the canal. Dante flung himself down the steps, pausing only to inform the guards stationed outside their quarters that he was going to check on a possible disturbance. As he ran out the doors, he pulsed Naren's loon again, but there was no response. He hopped in a canoe, stirring the scent of brackish water as he paddled toward the western wall. There had been something like 30 or 40 trails through the water. If they were all blighted, that wouldn't be a problem. The shadows were starting to come easily again, and would rip apart the undead in seconds. If they were blighted, led by a lesser lich, it might be more of a challenge, yet he fully expected that he'd still be able to destroy them by himself, or, at the very least, retreat and rally at one of the towers. Besides, with most of his team injured or passed out in bed, what other choice was there? He came to the southern tips of the silvery trails, which were already fading away. He tracked them north, the light strengthening as he went. After a few hundred yards, it was blazing under the water and seemed to be intensifying at a sluggish walking speed, one that would match that of bodies slogging along underwater. Dante brought the canoe in to land. Nicking his arm, he summoned the nether to his right hand. He dropped a good chunk of his ether into the water, asking it to glow as pure light. Pale rays shot through the water. On the canal bed, illuminated despite the murk, 40 blighted threw their hands over their eyes against the intrusion of the light. Dante didn't have much experience with using the nether to blast things underwater, so he sent a single bolt as a test case. It moved more slowly than it would through open air, but struck the target forcefully enough to punch a hole through the man's chest. He staggered, a cloud of blood wafting through the water. The blighted took off to the north at what passed for a run. Dante only had to walk to keep up, striding alongside a retaining wall. He plowed a half dozen shadowy missiles into the water. All struck their targets, but only 3 did so with enough damage to kill. Could he force or lure them from the water somehow? Or was there a way to work with the water to reduce the energy he was spending? Because while it was likely that it would be at least another day before the White Lich arrived, he passed the corner of the retaining wall. A shadow flew toward him, robes flapping behind it. Dante thrusted it with the nether, but the nether was already coming at him, battering past his defenses, enfolding everything in darkness. Cold tingled over him. He smelled ice. It felt like some time had passed. He opened his eyes and stared into those of the White Lich. Dante kicked his feet against the stone ground, trying to slide away as he snatched out at the nether. The lich lifted his index finger. Dante's feet and hands seemed to freeze to the floor. A whip of ether dashed the shadows from his command.
"You will stop that."
The lich's metallic voice grated like flint drawn down the side of a copper bowl.
"Or I will hurt you until you learn to stop."
Dante bit his teeth together hard enough to strain his jaw. He made another grab at the nether. The ether whipped out again, dispersing it. A second whip of ether lashed at Dante. Pain launched up his spine. Every muscle in his body went as stiff as a tile. He heard himself scream. He was gone for a while. The coldness returned. He opened his eyes.
He'd pissed himself. He was lying in a stone chamber. The walls were covered in glyphs, and the air smelled damp and somehow old. The white lich stood 15 feet from him, the light emanating from the sorcerer's skin making his outline indistinct, like a vision from a dream. He barely had room to stand without scraping his head on the ceiling. Dante found he was able to tilt his head to meet the lich's gaze, but the rest of his body was bound in place by implacable strands of ether. "Why not kill me?" The lich's expression barely changed, yet he was somehow able to exude a sense of pitying contempt.
"You are smarter than most, sorcerer. Don't beg me for answers that you can find for yourself."
"You want me for something? Information? Or to turn me into one of your slaves? Or both?"
"Think more deeply yet."
"Except for the fact that other nethomancers seem to be of use to you, and that you're completely insane, I know almost nothing about you."
Only the lich's lips moved.
"We are not always rational. Not everything is done in the service of securing resources. Sometimes we act for satisfaction. Maybe I just want to hurt you."
Dante's scalp tingled.
"Do you?"
"Yes," the lich said. "But I do not think that I will."
"How did you get to me?"
"You already possess the answer."
Despite his half-terror, Dante nearly rolled his eyes. Then he frowned instead.
"After you ambushed us with the Blighted, you knew we'd be on the lookout for further incursions. So, you gave us one. When I went out to investigate, your lieutenant attacked me from the shadows."
"Yes."
"Why not just kill me, though? What if I'd been able to fight off your lieutenant, or woken up while he was still taking me to you, and destroyed him?"
"You oppose me. You would give your life to stop me. Do you even know what it is that you fight?"
"Well, yes. A madman bent on conquering everything."
"Why do I do what I do?"
"Power. You want to rule everything, and remove all threats to your life."
"Those are lesser goals. What is the main one?"
Dante thought for several seconds, then shook his head.
"I don't know. You forgot to send the manifesto around."
"How long have you humans lived on this land?"
"It isn't entirely clear. I was taught that the gods gave us life about 2,000 years ago.
The lich's mouth budged into the suggestion of a smile. The light in his eyes danced.
"You are taught wrong. Your knowledge is as shallow as this swamp. The truth is as deep as the seas that lay beyond the land."
"You're talking about the uniquely Tenarian idea that we've been around much longer than that. At least 20,000 years. Perhaps as much as 100,000.
"This interests you. I see it in your face. Yet you deny it."
Dante would have crossed his arms, but as they were currently locked in place beside him, he settled for crinkling his brow.
"Can I say that I find it excessively odd that you,
the all-feared Aedon Rane, have kidnapped me in order to deliver me a history lesson?
I do not fear when birds caw or frogs croak. Speak as you will. Do you know how the old world was lost?
The sorcerers built a beautiful world, but they did so on the backs of their slaves. Eventually there was a rebellion. Apparently one so big that the entire world got smashed up, which I find difficult to believe logistically. As the sorcerers were on the brink of defeat, they unleashed a race of demons they'd created, ones that hunted people. The demons slaughtered almost everyone, drove the survivors into hiding. After a long while, the demons died out. But it was tens of thousands of years until people began to build cities and nations again. He crooked one eye. Supposedly. Effortlessly, the Aedon Rane drew the ether to him, the light scintillating and jagged. If Dante hadn't already pissed himself, he would have done so then. The Lich spread his hands wide. In the air between them, a vision formed, as crystal clear as existence itself. A great city, towers like blades of grass, gleaming streets, horses as proud as victorious warriors. Then, in a mad rush that somehow remained comprehensible to Dante's eye, those clean streets filled with rebels. Towers burned and fell. Light and shadow smashed whole neighborhoods into craters. As the last of the towers was set to be taken, creatures flowed from its base. Humanoid, but their arms ended in long claws, their hairless bodies hard and lean. They crossed the rubble in great bounds, the fangs of their long jaws stained with blood. In the sped-up vision, they tore through the remains of the city in a blink, then spread outward, multiplying as they went, devouring whole towns, cities, everything. Until there was no more smoke, no more farmers driving their flocks or children playing in the fields. No more anything but the wind and the grass. The Lich lowered his hands. The vision faded, leaving them in the dimness of the chamber.
This is what once was.
How do you know it looked like that? You weren't there, were you? The giant laughed. A surprising sound, like the ring of steel bowls clapped together.
No, but I have seen it.
You aren't Sean, are you?
Sean is long dead, and I am not. What I have shown you is what was, what must be prevented from ever happening again.
Dante sputtered. Your plan is to save the world from being destroyed by destroying the world?
It will not be destroyed.
But it won't be anything. It'll just be you sitting on a mountain of bones getting worshipped by a pack of murderous half-zombies.
You deride the blighted as mindless slaves to their hungers and hate. How is it so different from when they lived as humans?
The Blighted can't even put their pants on the right way. Which won't be much of a problem, as the Blighted are too stupid to make new pants, and will soon all be naked. Enjoy looking at that for the rest of eternity.
The Blighted are one tool. A craftsman needs many. Some, like you, will retain your intelligence.
So you're going to make me one of your underliches. I'll wait to thank you until I have no free will. Then you can make me thank you as much as you want. Incidentally, I'm sure your generosity toward elites like me will be of great comfort to the Blighted.
Don't speak like you have any care for them, the lich said. You kill them like roaches.